It is necessary to investigate before legislating. But the line between investigating and persecuting is a very fine one.
The investigators tell us it seems the suspect was going to pass them, then turned and fired.
Laura, what you're seeing behind me is one of multiple locations.
I rise to support the impeachment of President Donald J. Trump.
And I'm about to talk to him about allegations that he was involved with prostitutes in Moscow and that the Russians taped it and have leverage over him.
We are honored to have back with us Michael Yon. He is putting out a lot of information on all these terror suspects that are in the U.S. Doing really bad things. Michael, thanks for digging out some time for me, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks. I'm back in Texas, still in Texas. I love it here. Yeah, you know you're back in Texas because the water went out two nights ago. Investigation in the morning showed it was fire ants. Fire ants, you know how they can go to electricity and get in the pump.
Well, that's me back to my Georgia days. I remember those well.
Yeah. I grew up in Florida too. It's like Florida, Georgia, Texas, Panama, ants. The Japanese respect ants a lot for their ability to work as teams and work together for better or for worse. They are really team players and super smart as a group, you know.
They know how do they communicate? I've always wondered how they communicate, you know. There has to be some kind of way they do it.
They use pheromones. I know that much because I learned that much when I was a kid. I read a book on ants and I learned that when they're doing their stigmergic learning, how to make the shortest path, which is very complex. You know, it's very, very complex to make the shortest path between two places when you're, you know, at scale, that scale or any scale. And so what they do is they leave pheromone trails. And as that pheromone trail increases, then they are like, okay, more ants have taken this path, and they just keep working it out.
Wow.
Interestingly, so one thing I learned reading that book as a child, a child when you're a teenager, but you know, you can lick your finger like this and put a circle around the ants. Let's say if they're on a wall, it's hard to do in the sand, but you can do it. You can draw a circle around them in the sand, but you'll mess up their pheromone trail. And when you do that, make a circle around the ants they're going. The ones who are inside the circle will start walking around. They get lost and they keep checking. And then the ones who are outside the circle, they're like, I was following the trail and it just stopped. But they have a program for that one too. They have an algorithm for everything. Wow. and then they just start bumping on that circle that you made until one of them works it through. It won't take them long. It's not like it's going to take them 2 hours. They run into a problem that they run into constantly. Okay. Our trail interrupted. Go to next program. Trail going again. Try it when you see ants on the wall. So they do.
I'm going to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So they are very sophisticated. They're like little F-35s in a tiny body.
So is that how the terrorists get into the U.S.? They just follow the pheromones of the guy that came in front of him?
Actually, in a sense. If you read my Substack, I published something on stigmergic learning about 2 months ago or so, and it was very popular. It was a very popular dispatch, actually. And a lot of military people and others are like, we don't exactly use pheromone trails, but we... When, for instance, trail making, I was driving down somewhere in Texas recently, and you see there's a malfunction junction where all the intersections go together. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, eight roads collide type stuff. It's a spaghetti, right?
Yeah.
And I was with somebody in the car, and I said, this is probably right in the area where Indians used to cross paths as well. Probably. Yeah. And it's probably in the area where migratory animals like a bison or something used to cross, probably, right? But when you see like down in areas around the world, like I spend a lot of time in third world countries, like, I don't know, a year in Nepal, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. you'll see the people follow the same paths as like the yaks follow, right? And after some period of time, if the population grows and it's a relatively sophisticated population, you'll end up with a road. And then later you'll end up with these days, you'll end up with maybe a train or something, depending on how important that route is. But yeah, when we were in the Afghan war, I was in Iraq and Afghanistan, but in the Afghan war, I remember there was some Marine major, this was kind of in the news, but he had developed some program called an honesty trace. I think he was a Marine major. Hopefully the Marines or others who are out here watching this can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is roughly accurate. He developed this program for our Blue Forces tracker. Blue Forces tracker is the tracker that would track where we are, like Blue Forces. Yeah. Friendly forces are Blue Forces, right? So we need to know where Blue Forces are so we don't shoot at each other and that sort of thing, right? And so the Blue Forces tracker also keeps track of all the places you've been, right? It leaves, you know, and so back at headquarters, you can see all of our, you know, we tend to go these routes. And it's interesting because over a period of days, weeks, months, years, even different units, we will tend to make the same, like, let's say one Marine unit leaves and another Marine unit comes in. And this new Marine unit says, hey, we're going to go places where the enemy would not think to put an ambush or an IED, right? Because, you know, we're going to use good Marine tactics and we're going to do this. However, the previous unit also used good tactics and they went to the same schools you did. And so you're probably going to tend to select what they selected. Well, the Taliban notices this. The Taliban are very smart. I read one book from the 1800s where the Pashtun people were fighting the British, and the British commander is like, how good they are at noticing where some unit was that passed through 2 years ago. So they wait in that place. And this is part of the Pashtun firmware, you know, Pashtun, most of the Taliban are Pashtun people, and modern Taliban. But the point is, it's part of their firmware to watch where the guy went 2 years ago. You're going to sit under this shade tree when it's hot, because it's hot here. So we put a bomb under the shade tree. That actually happened with one unit that I was just landed in a helicopter one day, and everybody's, you know, moving around doing stuff quickly. And it so happened that an Afghan commander sat in the shade, boom, sat in the shade of the tree, blew him up. He was dead. Right. That was my introduction to that new unit. I wasn't there when it happened because I just landed and they were busy with that stuff.
That brings me to something. Atlanta, Georgia was always in a weird spot. And I was told in the past that it was an old, crossroads. And that's why the city developed. And that may be exactly what you're talking about. I mean,
look at Memphis.
Over time.
Look at Memphis. Right? Look at Memphis. Like we were looking at data center stuff a few months ago. And a friend of mine actually went to Memphis. He's a very capable researcher. But we were down in Panama together researching that potential conflict down there, and then finally he pushed off to Memphis. And a question was, why is Memphis a place where they would put data centers? And I said, because I study these things, Memphis will be a center. Why does FedEx have their headquarters there, right?
Yeah,
it's because that is the sensible mathematical space place, the center of the work where you would want your beehive to be. The bees want their hive to be right in the middle of the, you know, they want the hive to be in the and the ants want to be, their ant beds are, you know, a couple of things. One is it has to be, you know, good land. It's not a place that's going to flood them out usually, you know, and that sort of thing. But also that they want it to be near the food, right? And you want it to be near the center of the food, right? And so the center of the bulk of the food, right? And so Memphis happens to be that. And if you look at the population center of the United States, it's roughly at around Memphis area right now, actually, right?
Yeah.
So these paths that you find, and they're all out there, they were created no telling when ago by animals and Indians and other things. And then we came on wagon trains and we're on the same path. And finally, these major interstates that you go down, a lot of those will be like mostly like old Indian areas that they used to go as well. Not straight. It's like, not like they had their own I-75 or I-10 or something like that, or Highway 1. But it will be something like that. It'll be very close.
That's really interesting, man. So how, tell me about these people that are coming into the U.S. that have been, you've been tracking them, right?
Yeah. And they've been doing the same thing, building their little stigmergic, learning how to invade the United States and Europe and Japan and Australia and more, right? And so look at this guy that just did the whatever attack up in Boulder with the flames. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure what happened. Anyway, I didn't see the video of him. Maybe they elided the video from what happened with this so-called flamethrower. Was it Molotovs or was it flamethrower?
I saw pictures with him with two Molotovs, and then people got burned allegedly.
They were squirt bottles. So maybe I don't know what exactly he did because I didn't see video of that, which is probably out there. But I saw him holding the flame bottles, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe he did. I don't know, but apparently he burned a bunch of people, right? Mm-hmm. And interestingly, one of the ladies allegedly burned. I say allegedly because everything is a stage these days. We don't know truth.
It's all a lie. It's all fake.
It's hard to sort it out. And with intention of the people who do these things. But she is, first of all, you see her in the headlines. She's a Holocaust victim, mm-hmm. a Holocaust survivor victim, right? Actually, that turns out to be fake. She's not a Holocaust survivor, but that's the news. And that's the way she's made herself out to be. She's 88 years old. Her family was wealthy, as it turns out. She was never in the Holocaust. She was born in Hungary. She was, she ended up in the United States in 1945, according to what I've read. And, mm-hmm. and she was actually in Italy and other places. Anyway, she was never in any camps or any of that stuff. It's the normal Holocaust fraud, right? There's so many frauds. I call it pityopathy, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Where people, because there are certain people that will always fall for the pity. And those are the prey of the pity paths, right? The people pity pathology, right? And so professional victims are always predators. I've never seen an exception. And that goes from a personal level to a cult level and to a cultural level and to a national level. Some countries, some peoples are just natural victims. Some cultures that are not natural victims, like they, reject that, is like Japanese and English. Japanese and English, they reject. I mean, there'll be people within their cultures that are professional victims, but as a add up, do all the math, mm-hmm. Japanese are not professional victims. English are not professional victims. Although there are, the British soldiers used to, when I was in Iraq and Afghanistan with British, and I did a lot of combat with them. So a lot of their soldiers were killed when I was there. And mm-hmm. I mean, in units that I was with. And occasionally there will be a family member who just glumps onto the death of her usually son, right? Just glumps onto it and then uses that as like a cause, like, and just like to the point where it becomes kind of gross, right? And it becomes to the point where it's like somebody that wears 8 pounds of makeup and their neck is sagging from the makeup, right? It's just, so the British call that actually a grief whore. They actually call that.
Really?
Oh yeah, they call it a grief whore. But I mean, that's a crude and vulgar term for pityopathy, right?
And interesting because, I remember the Zulu movie. I forget the name of the movie where there's a million Zulus coming to a few hundred British in the bush and they're about to get wiped out. And the young kid is running to the quartermaster and he's like, I need more ammo. And he's like, only one every 5 minutes. And the dude's like, there's a million guys coming to me. And he's like, come back in 5 minutes. I mean, the British, you're right, were not like that. They were used to fighting with discipline.
But they actually still do. But their military is falling apart now. Obviously, mm-hmm. I got these two books here. Actually, you can get these in a three series of three, two. These two were printed in 1852, right? Mm-hmm. And this is an outstanding book. You can get them new actually from Amazon but I like the old ones because they have more drawings and stuff. Sure. So I find them more useful. But this is the Memoirs of Extraordinary Popular Delusions, right? And the Madness of Crowds, incredible books, man. Let me say it again, because if people want to read an incredible couple of books, or depending on which, you can get it in one big book. It's Memoirs of Extraordinary Popular Delusions, right? And in here, he actually talks about during Tulip Mania, what he's talking about is all these different huge delusions that people have had over the years. Not always fraud, but just manias and sometimes fraud. Like, for instance, massive witch hunts, killing huge amounts of people in witch hunts. That was a mania, right? And these things are constantly swept. These things aren't something that happen occasionally. They are always happening, always, including
happened a few years ago and for COVID. That was a total mania.
And right now, there's all these smaller ones that are always going on that are huge if you're a part of it. Like, for instance, Bitcoin. Now, people will get very emotional when you mention Bitcoin, some people. And if you're feeling emotional, what will he say next? And I say something against Bitcoin. If you get angry, like, yo, you don't understand the technology, you're in a cult, dude. You're in a cult straight up, right out of Tulip Mania. In fact, if you read, and trust me, I'm what every day this morning when I woke up, I had a message from a very wealthy guy, and he is totally into Bitcoin. He's a super smart guy. Every day he's talking about the virtues of Bitcoin. And he's like, so-and-so just adopted Bitcoin and yada, yada, yada. But this is the thing, is it doesn't matter about your wealth or education. Tulip mania, you know, in the 1600s and that swept across Holland at the time, you know, and you know, keep in mind, the Dutch are known for their prudence, right? The Dutch are also never professional victims. They're known for their prudence. If you think of Dutch, you're like, oh yeah, they're very good in business. Well, guess what? Tulip mania swept across and rearranged the wealth structure of Netherlands. You know what I mean?
Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
I'm David Cross, and you may know me from my election integrity work, but I also own U.S. Asset Management, a family-owned and operated investment advisory practice. I'm a certified portfolio manager, and my job is to help you make better decisions with your money. One of the things we try to avoid is investing in companies that push the woke agenda. If you're invested with one of the big firms out there, there's a pretty good chance that you're feeding the beast that hates your values. Our company is 100% conservative, and we'd love to have an opportunity to work with you. Check us out at us-am.com and look for our big, proud American Eagle logo.
I mean, it didn't like break Netherlands, right? Netherlands kept going, but it internally, a lot of people that used to be rich are now homeless, and some people are living in their homes. And it went across the whole spectrum. But the Tulip Mania, in the section where he talks about Tulip Mania, he also talks about how the tulips that people so valued were actually the original tulips that grow wild. They're very hardy. They're like poppy, you know what I mean? They're super hardy. They don't need much water. They can take a beating and keep on growing, you know, keep on blooming. And but the ones that they bred, the ones that were so valuable, were very delicate, very like you had to treat them like babies, right? Because they were hard to keep alive, actually, which is interesting, because he talks about that in one of the volumes, volume two, I think. Yeah, volume two. And he talks about that. And he says, what is this strange trait with people, like the mother who focuses only on her sickly child and just complete attention? And of course, that child then becomes more sick because he gets more attention. But the rest of the healthy children get no attention. That's like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. People who've watched the movie, and Ferris Bueller's in his bed, and his mother and his father are doting over him, and his sister, who's very strong, she's just like getting disgusted with Ferris. She knows it's fake, and that's the whole pitiopathy, right? And of course, Ferris Bueller's playing it up. Yeah, I'm sick, Mom. Oh, you know, it's a tale as old as time. But in any case.
I think it's kind of wearing off right now, though. I mean, I think people see through it in a lot of ways, and because there's a lot of different pity parties going on for the last few years.
Let me finish that. That's what I want to say, right? Yeah. That woman, that 88-year-old woman who's supposedly a victim of the Holocaust, which she was not. That's a lie. Pityopathy, there she goes. And then she was at this protest supporting Israel to do their genocide in Gaza, right? Other people are losing their minds now, flicking the channel. Get it? I totally get it. It's a cult. And the next one is she's wearing a Highest pin right here. She's wearing a Highest Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, their whole business model is pity. Pity is their product. Literally is their product. And so they are some of the major people that are invading the United States is Hayes. I'm with them all. I used to eat breakfast with them all the time. They down in Darien in Panama. They eat breakfast at Tenosa Hotel right off Highway 1, right by San Vicente Camp. Their office is like 80 yards probably from where we used to eat breakfast, about 40 yards or 30 yards from the front of San Vicente Camp, which is China Camp. So in other words, a guy by the name who did the flame thing over in Colorado with his squirt bottles or whatever they were, there's a guy, he's an Egyptian. There's a guy by that name, an Egyptian, who came through that camp, right? He's on the database. Mm-hmm. I was able to check. And I have the database. It's pretty easy to check.
Yeah, I know you do.
So he actually, I don't know if it was him because the age is different. A guy by his name came through. And in any case, one way or the other, the fact that he's even in America with his whole family, it's Hayes, it's United Nations, it's all those pity party people. United Nations is
Catholic charities too.
Catholic mm-hmm. charities, we should be blowing their doors off the hinges. United States government should be seizing all of their assets and whatnot for the things that they've done to this country. That I was on a call. I told you this recently, about in mid-May. So what was that? 3 weeks ago now. I was on mm-hmm. a call with Marjorie Taylor Greene's people on this House Oversight Committee stuff. To my knowledge, Marjorie Taylor Greene was not on the call. If she was, she was silent and listening. But in any case, one of the people on the call is like, you know, we shouldn't go after the NGOs that are faith-based, like Catholic Charities and Hayes and yada, yada. And because he doesn't want to upset people. I mean, this is the weak mind of some of the, and this was a male voice. I wouldn't say it was a man voice because a man would never say idiotic stuff like that. Like we shouldn't hurt the feelings of our enemies who are destroying us. That's like saying, I don't want to hurt the feelings of the guys that just blew down the hinges on my door and are going for the wife and kids.
I always wonder if that is just incompetence or ignorance or complicity or all of the above or what. I mean,
one way or the other is treason. As we boil it down to the you know, all the water's gone and see what's left behind, treason. Yeah. Straight up treason. Yeah. Now it could be now how did we get to that treason? I don't know. It could be weakness. He could just be a coward. Because cowardice mm-hmm. is the germ of treason, or is a germ of treason.
Go along and get along. Just keep my job and keep my paycheck and say what I need to say.
And you know, there are some levels. I get it where people are out there and go along to get along is important in many circumstances. But there are certain things where there is a line where you don't go along to get along beyond this line, right? Mm-hmm. And that line, for instance, would be drug heads like Joe Rogan pushing drugs to millions, tens of millions of young people. That's a line I will not cross, right? So many times I've been offered, I can help you get on Joe Rogan. He's like, you think I'm going on Dopehead Joe Rogan show? By the way, I've told millions of people on interviews and written it so many times, I'll never go on Joe Rogan show while he's a dopehead pushing dope, him and Rocket Tweezer guy smoking dope together, Elon Musk, in front of tens of millions of young people. That is enemy action. That's not stupidity. Do we think somebody that's smart enough to put brain chips in us and fly to Mars and all these sorts of things is then stupid enough to smoke dope in front of millions of young people, right? Together on the Joe Rogan show, right? Now, I was told last night that Joe Rogan, I don't know if this is true. I was just told this last night that Joe Rogan may have renounced the dope thing. Maybe he renounced it after. I don't know. I don't know if he's doing that publicly or not. I hope he is. Because
you're talking about the product he developed, the gummies or whatever, right?
I don't know. But I don't know. I just was told that last night. I haven't had a chance to check into it yet. But the bottom line is, he's got a giant tree. I got a little hatchet, and I will chop that tree down. I've chopped down a lot of trees in my time. I chopped down McChrystal. He didn't get fired from the Rolling Stone article. He got fired from the things that I did and set the table for that, right? Jeremy Menard, gone. Bankrupted a magazine. It's called Shock Magazine from HFM. Gone, right? You can do it. You just got to realize you're never going to chop down a great big poison tree with one chop. Sometimes you can, but I can't with my axe on something like that. But I can chop away right now. Right now, as we talk, another little piece of wood flew out. Because some people are going to get what I'm saying. When the Japanese have a word for people who Masako Ganaha told me this. We were talking about it last night, and she talked about a Japanese word for people who justify what they know is wrong. And that word in Japanese means like rotten to the core, right? Because mm-hmm. there's people that know that what they're doing is wrong, and then they go, yeah, it's wrong. I need to fix that. I shouldn't be doing that, right? Because we've all been through that in our life, of course. Everybody. Mm-hmm. There's no exception to people. Like this old man said many years ago, son, you know when you're doing dirt, right? And so, but there's people that have a moral core that do dirt, and then they go, that's wrong. I feel bad about that. I can't do that because they have a moral core, right? But there's people mm-hmm. without the moral core. They spend their whole life justifying why it's freedom to smoke dope, why it's freedom. You know, dope is not as bad as alcohol. That too, right? And the prescription drugs is worse. That too, right? It's not the dope per se, or whatever dope is. By the way, the young dope heads today, a lot of them, they think that they're the latest experts on this, as if all this stuff was invented after their birth. You know what I mean? They don't realize, like when I use the term dope, they'll be like, you don't even know what dope is. I mean, boomer or whatever. It's like, you just fell out. You just came out of the ground as a sprout right now. You know what I'm saying? If you look in these old books,
read about the opium wars and then
all this stuff was well developed and highly mature before your great grandparents were born. You're just a little sprout where cows are eating you, right? Cows are you're gone, you know, because another cow ate you, right? And so at the end of the day, the term dope, for instance, has been used for I think it first came from Dutch people. When they would dope that they would use to, like putty in boats and that sort of thing. Or, you know, dope has many meanings, right? Like opium is like dope, right? It's like, you know, dope that you use as putty, right? And it's kind of plasticky. And, but I don't really know. I've tried to find the etymology of the word and it kind of always fades to gray. But the bottom line is that many terms have been used to describe, I mean, many different types of dope, but dope is also a catch-all. Like dope can mean cocaine. In the past, people have called cocaine dope, right? Anything that's an intoxicant, they'll say, get off those dope pills, right? Mm-hmm. Like dope pills can be whatever pills that the doctor prescribed that's making you crazy. That's an old term, dope pills. The doctor's prescribing dope pills. They're making you loopy, right? You know, so this idea that suddenly you were born now and you watch a bunch of YouTube crap and you're suddenly an expert on this stuff. You ain't going to be an expert on this stuff without 10 years of study. I'll guarantee you. This is a big, deep subject. And the new generations and us, we were born after this was a highly mature thing. And when you're doing psychological operations and you want people greased up and fueled up for psychological operations, the number one weapon is intoxicants, whether that be alcohol, dopes of any flavor, whether that be prescription dope or
not. Well, all you got to do is drive down any town in the USA and count the smoke shops, right?
Yeah. Every time I see a bum on the street in America, which is very often, you know, shitting on themselves, pissing on themselves, let's just call it what it is, probably infested with, you know, typhus bearing lice, I think of Joe Rogan. I literally think of Joe Rogan. Every time I see one of these guys stooped over and he can't move because he's in one of those dope stupors from whatever that guy's on, you know, and of course the dope heads would go, don't you know he's on fentanyl or some crap, whatever. I read a book on fentanyl. That was pretty sickening stuff. But the point is every time I see a dope head with, you know, they got the piss running down their leg and stuff like that, I think of Joe Rogan. Those are millions of Joe Rogan products. And that could be the future of Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan may end up like that if he continues on the drugs. And I mean, because his fame and fortune are completely irrelevant. He doesn't have any fortune anyway. He's on the speck of, he's a hired hand for the big people, right? Now for the normal people, he's very wealthy and he's famous. He gets to meet all these cool people. He's got a cool job. He lays around getting drunk and smoking dope with Elon Musk, right? That's cool to people with low brain wattage, right? It's not cool to people who are fighting in the real world. It's not cool at all. That's enemy action. That's like, well, you know, go ahead, sir.
I was going to say, you talk about Japan and other cultures. You know, the mark of a successful society in the past, I think, which we don't have as much today, is respect for the elders. I mean, because you learn from the elders, you have that humility, and you say, teach me what you know about this. But because you're right, the young kids don't know a lot of things about certain things. And I don't want to be the old guy who says you don't know anything. But I will say the respect for the elders is important. And when I don't see it, it makes me angry.
It's actually very important, because that's part of the structure. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like every elder is a wise elder. That we all know that's not true. But they are very important. Very important. And one of the things in information war, if you want to destroy and erode a people, I would, you know, the number one weapon is intoxicants. And it's been like this since the edge of time, right? The edge of recorded history. You use intoxicants to get people into cults. You control their diets. You control some cults revolve around don't do any intoxicants at all, but others revolve around, you know, getting people intoxicated. For instance, many of the suicide bombers in Iraq, they were on drugs. I mean, straight up, they used the drugs to get them suggestible, and they were watching all these films, and, you know, and then, you know, they know how to do their selection habits and that sort of thing. They know the things to watch for, because first, you know, like somebody who's going to train dogs, I mean, quite literally, the expert dog trainer that's done it for 20 or 30 years, he's going to walk out there and he's going to go, well, this one looks like a good one. This one, it's not, it has nothing to do with the color of the coat of their hair or something. It's going to be behavior. He's going to go that one, and you can keep the rest. Right. And that's the way it is with recruiting suicide bombers. They're going to have certain qualities that they're going to notice. And after they do some stimuli, and then they're going to take those guys and they're going to take them into the madrasa somewhere, like down in, you know, in Pakistan or whatever. And then they put them into action, which will be happening all over the United States right now with people that came across the Darien and other places that HIAS, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society is bringing people into the United States who definitely will kill Jews. 100% they will kill Jews. They're already attacking them. We find others on the database, like this guy that shot the Jewish guy, Todd Benzman wrote about. That guy came through the Darien Gap. That guy matches up perfectly, his age, the dates that he came through and that sort of thing, and country of origin, that everything matched up perfectly, right? By the way, a young Air Force cadet in Texas.
Yeah, Ava Moore. Yeah.
Ava Moore was killed, maybe 10 days ago? She just was buried a couple days ago. And two migrants, they say in the news, but let's say invaders, because that's what they really are, came through the Darien Gap. They're on the database. And the female, apparently, who was on the jet ski, she's so poor that she had to come through the Darien Gap to get on a jet ski.
I'm watching my friends gain more and more weight. And then eventually, I got to tell you, this is a little dark, but a bad diet literally killed my whole crew.
Wow.
Diabetes, a stroke. I mean, all kinds of stuff. It's like you had a stroke. You're not even 50 years old. You guys got to quit eating this stuff. Your body knows what's what. You're not conscious of this. But that's why people will go to the refrigerator and they'll grab this and that and the other and put together this outrageously elaborate combination of foods. Your body's trying to reach balance. Unbeknownst to us, our bodies are always trying to reach homeostasis. You can't eat all of this stuff and expect to live a long time. And one thing led to another, and I went, you know, forget this. We're going to make our own product. So we partnered with one of the world's top three biochemists where nutrition-specific study is concerned. I said, all I want is the best nutritional and immune support product in the world. So we mix it in yogurt. It's a powder. I got a bag of it here. I keep one on the console all the time, you know, just so I can show people.
Yeah.
And it's a powder. Now, this is not candy. This is hardcore nutrition. And sugar is an enemy. And most people do not know that the reason these bellies are showing up on people all over the place, your body makes fat to store the toxins it can't get rid of. Mm-hmm. So it just puts them over here. But I can tell you this. You take this for 30 days and then lay off of it for 2 or 3 days, and you'll go, good grief, give me some more. Skin, nails, hair growing back, cut yourself and it heals in half the time.
To be involved in the death of an Air Force cadet. So in any case, she's got a kind of a complicated name. And so, it's got four names in it. I can see she came across the Darien Gap. Her age matches up perfectly. When she came across matches up perfectly. Venezuela, that matches up. Everything matches up. And the guy that was arrested with her, he also matches up with age, country of origin, time he came through the Darien Gap. Almost certainly those two came through. Another piece of evidence on who they are. Almost all of the people in their age group of Venezuelans who are coming across in recent few years come through the Darien Gap.
Was that intentional? Do you know? Because I'm an Air Force grad, and I'd like to know if that was intentional or not. Because what's her name? The Homeland Security's gnome came out and said we're going to try to look for the death penalty. But do you know if it was intentional running this kid over, or just manslaughter, high rate of speed?
I have no idea. Zero idea. But what I do have an idea about is that's almost certainly the two that came across the Darien Gap, and there's every mm-hmm. compass needle points that direction. That would be highest, again, helping them. United Nations, of course, these are all pitiopaths, right? Like highest, mm-hmm. their product is pity. Oh, I'm a professional victim. We got to help, and we got to help the Jews. But what they're really doing is allowing all the Muslims to come in and others to come in who will kill Jews. There ain't no Jews coming across.
Yeah, I was talking to a Jewish woman after that. I showed this Jewish woman your Substack, actually, about Hias, helping to kill Jews. And she said, that doesn't make sense. And I thought, That is just, you're so unrelated to reality of what's been going on for several years.
She's in the cult.
It's in your face. Yeah.
It's right there, man. I mean, if there's elephant footprints on the beach and you see elephants over there, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You can't mm-hmm. say, well, it doesn't make sense that there's elephants on the beach. I'm like, there's elephant poop. There's elephant footprints. There's elephants. Yeah, there's elephants mm-hmm. on the beach. Hias is facilitating the murder of Jews in the United States. And there, if you go to Hias.org, go to Hias.org, Hais.org, and look at all the list of donors. Pritzker's, Shapiro's, there's a Ben Shapiro on there of unknown origin. I mean, there's all kinds of people on there, right? And I'm like, hey, that's very interesting that these people are actually funding the deaths of Jews in the United States. You can't make up this stuff. Catholic Charities is doing the same. Lutheran Services doing the same. IOM doing the same. All these Norwegian refugee councils, Red Cross doing the same, right? But most interesting about the highest and why we're talking about it now is that lady, the 88-year-old who's a fake Holocaust victim, she was wearing a highest pin on the photos. Mm-hmm. It's on my Substack now. Look at her on Substack. Hias helped that guy in who was involved in the attack. And then there was a mysterious Israeli IDF guy at the attack, handsome guy, super well-spoken, hero of the moment. Suddenly he's all over the news. Does this look like another stage? I don't know. But we see so many things that are staged at big levels and small. I've been mm-hmm. in so many things that were staged. Like I took Masako Gunaha in front of the White House. And I said, do you see this BLM painted on the road in front of the White House? This is a permanent or semi-permanent stage. It's an actual stage, right? It's a literal stage in front of the White House as the backdrop for the stage. And I mean, as a stage, I mean, literally, it's a Hollywood type stage, right? And so these things are staged all over the world constantly. I've seen this in many countries. I've seen it in Thailand many, many times, right? Mm. And for instance, at Democracy Monument, I was in two of the coups in Thailand, right? So a little background there. I've been in a lot of fighting in Thailand, like a lot, and months at a time out, fighting and yada, yada. But at the end of the day, many of the people that were involved in some of the fighting in Thailand, a lot of it was organic, honest, great Thai people are standing up for their country. They have a strong heart. And then there was others who were paid. And they were coming in on buses, right? And I tracked them down and I actually found a company that was behind it. And that same company ended up being caught doing it in South Africa later, right? What was the name of that company? But they actually admitted to it when they got hardcore caught. But I first got on their trail in, it was a British company. I first got on their trail in Thailand. And again, a few years later, they got caught in South Africa getting people riled up to kill white people in South Africa, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a British company. And so almost certainly British intelligence, right? And so I don't know if it was, but that's how they roll. And so at the end of the day, you see these, I saw some of it in Hong Kong, for instance. I was there for 7 months until they kicked me out. Most of the protests there were organic, but a lot of the protests were, they were coming in on buses. And I tracked some of them down. And some of the ones that were not organic typically were much older people, and they were getting paid. They would be brought in on buses. They would hold their signs up, and it would get in the, and it would get in the news, because they would, part of the stage was to have the media there. So the media would be there and yada, yada. And then they would go off on the buses, right? It's the same thing. I see it over and over and over. It happens in the United States. You hear about the U-Haul trucks or whatever coming in with people.
Oh, yeah. Getting
up, they do their thing and they get back on. It's the same thing. It's a tale as old as time. You know, I was at January 6th and I watched people coming up at January 6th, and a lot of them had the drums, 1776, their uniforms marching. Let me tell you who has the drums at protests. Left wing, left wing. Anytime you hear people say, look at the Trumpers, you know, beating the drums on every country I go to, if they got drums, they're communist. I'm telling you, search for yourself. Don't take my word for it. Next time you have a protest out somewhere, you got somebody beating the drums, the bongos and all that stuff. Yeah, follow those people back.
You know what that is? That's the pain. A
Tommy who smells like dope almost every time. It's like they're totally already drugged up. You get near them when they're beating the bongos and smell them, man. Just smell them.
Well, that comes from the pagan history, man. I mean, it goes way back. The whole, you know, anarchist, nihilist, drumming kind of thing in the woods. You know, worshiping the tree or whatever.
What's the best book on that, man? You're getting me off on something here. I'd like to look more on that.
I don't know. I would say probably some of the Viking stuff for one. Look
beating the drums out in the woods, worship. You know, I know somebody who married a tree, but that's a different story. Actually, I'm going to be with their family again soon over in Nepal. I love them. It's like, but anyway, it's different cultures do different stuff. It's not like. With a tree, it's not that. It's a different. Actually, I'll tell you why they marry the tree. It's because in a lot of cultures, including a lot of Americans, they follow astrology very closely, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, like very closely. Like in Thailand, when the obstetrician can be very busy at a certain minute of the day because everybody's astrologer said you have to have the baby at an auspicious minute of the day, right? So the obstetricians are like, ready, set, go. Deliver all the babies, you know. And the people with the most money get they're the ones that are most on target. But in any case, so the astrology is quite big in different cultures. And so in one culture, at least one culture, there's the idea of something called Shakti, which is universal female power, right? Mm-hmm. And if the woman's Shakti is more powerful than the man's and they get married, her Shakti can kill him, right? So because her power is greater than his power, right? And so so if she marries the tree, her energy goes to that tree, that negative part of her energy goes to that tree, and her husband is now safe, but you got to keep the tree alive. It's interesting, isn't it? It's not like I'm in love with the tree. It's not like that. It's just more like, it's more of a, whether they actually believe it or not is unknown to me, but some will certainly believe it, and others probably just do it like a more of a cultural ritual at this point, you know?
Well, I think we've covered that subject pretty good, Mike. Appreciate your time, man. It's a good 45 minutes. So it's about all I can play for tomorrow.
Every time we get on, we burn on long.
No, it's good. It's good. I love the discussions and appreciate your time. And I know you're busy. And real quick, what are you doing in Texas right now?
Packing up, we're getting ready to go to Japan. But I've been in Texas for a while, meeting with all kinds of interesting people and fascinating meetings and dinners. And I just had dinner with Laura Logan the other night. And so Laura and I were just down the Darien Gap, actually.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So we had a small table of people there. It was fascinating. Actually, we went into a Man, we went. Let me tell you something. Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
We went into this antique store. I got the card here somewhere, but it's in Fredericksburg, Texas, right?
Uh-huh.
I went in there because they're friends of Laura Logan, but because I was asking about used bookstores there. You know me, I'm always looking for antique books. Yep. Because to me, that's where I'm panning for gold on old truth.
I agree with you, man.
I'm not a book collector. I'm a knowledge collector. And so anyway, this lady who her name's Carol. She has this antique store in Fredericksburg, and she's going around Europe to all these churches that are closing down because of what's happening. What mm-hmm. we were just talking about, you know, like Hyas. Actually, mm-hmm. come to think of it, you know, yeah. So anyway, her antique store, if you go in there in Fredericksburg, Texas, the name of the store starts with her name, Carol. Anyway, just look up antique store, Fredericksburg, Texas, if you're around, and Carol. But it's a huge antique store, and it's filled with stuff from churches in Europe, like France, wow. Netherlands, Germany, because these churches are all closing down. So and like Laura told me, she said, this basically is becoming, she's basically by accident recording the downfall of Christianity in Europe.
Yeah. Wow. I'm going to have to go to that store, man.
All the Texans that are around should go. Yeah. Or if you're near Fredericksburg, go in that store. Yeah.
Definitely. That's huge. I have a writer, a Gawain Toler, who works for Nigel, and he's always cataloging all the old churches in the UK that, you know, are just abandoned. I'm talking, you know, 800 years old, you know, like really cool stuff. But anyway, thank you, Michael. Appreciate your time, man. We'll do it again soon. All right. Take care.